I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. 18 years ago, the British Sunday Times ran a headline that said, "Revealed the secrets of Israel's nuclear arsenal." And it went on to tell a story about an Israeli subterranean factory beneath the Negev Desert building nuclear weapons. The source for the story was a young Israeli nuclear technician called Mordechai Vanunu. 1 month after that story ran, Vanunu disappeared. 1 month after that, Israel admitted that Vanunu had been captured and was being held for selling state secrets. Vanunu spent 18 years in prison. He was released earlier this year under strict conditions. He is forbidden to leave the country. He is required to get clearance to meet with foreigners, and he's not allowed to talk with foreign journalists. Now, Vanunu thinks all that's wrong, and in a moment he will explain why. What you'll hear is the voice of a man embittered by the treatment he's received from his fellow Israelis, and so much so that he's willing to accept any nation's sanctuary in order to leave. This hour, we invite you to join our conversation about the case of Mordechai Vanunu, not just as the world's best-known nuclear whistleblower, but as a symbol of Israel's don't-ask-don't-tell nuclear policy. Here's our question. Should Israel ever be required to explain its nuclear program, or does it, as a nation surrounded by hostile neighbors, have a special reason to maintain what it calls its nuclear ambiguity? Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Now, last week, Mordechai Vanunu was arrested again, accused of passing more secrets. We'll talk with one of the journalists who spent time with him, and we'll hear from Israelis who believe that Vanunu remains a threat and a traitor. But first, Vanunu himself. I spoke with him yesterday. He was in his room where he seeks refuge at the St. George Cathedral in East Jerusalem. I asked him to explain his current status.
Right now, I am under house arrest for 1 week since last Thursday. The police demanded to put me in house arrest for 1 week because they want to check all the stuff they took from my room, computer and CDs, in hope to find some secret documents. But I think they will realize very soon they have nothing to find there. They called me tomorrow to come to the police station to take part of the things they took from my room and to question me more questions about the last interviews I did. So the situation is I'm under house arrest for 1 week. But in fact, I'm under the restriction not to leave the country and not to speak to foreigners and to the foreign media for 1 year.
Now, if you're under those instructions from the government of Israel, why is it that you are speaking to foreign journalists, people like me?
Because I cannot and will not accept such inhuman and not according to democracy and human rights values, not to speak to foreigners or to any human being. We are human beings. We have the freedom of speech, and we have the right to exercise this freedom of speech. We cannot accept these restrictions, and I don't think they have the right to put these restrictions, especially Israel, who suffered, and the Jewish people who are reminding the world all what they have in the past, to demand from a human being not to speak. I have no secret to reveal. I'm speaking about my situation here, my political view, and my suffering experiences under the Israel authorities in 17 and a half years in prison in isolation.
Mr. Vanunu, how do you understand your situation right now? What we know is that you spent 18 years in jail for divulging nuclear secrets about the country, and then you were released. So does that mean that you have served your time for your crime, or are you still being punished?
My view, like every human being in the world, understanding that the Israel government judge me according to their law, according to their standards, and they put me in prison, and they give me 18 years, and I served full sentence, no parole, no any early release. So according to their standard, I have been punished. But now they're coming again and saying, you cannot speak, you cannot say anything. If you will speak, you will be punished. And that is unacceptable by me and by many people around the world. And we demand from Israel to let me go and to become a free human being. They cannot punish me again. They have no secret to reveal. And I have the right to be free and enjoy freedom like any human being.
Under Israeli law, are they obliged to tell you why they are still putting you under house arrest? Do they have to tell you why they are taking materials away from you?
Yes, they claim that I still have some secret I didn't reveal 18 years ago. And they also say I cannot speak about what I already revealed. But my view is it's just revenge and punishment, not really secret or security, because what I had revealed is now known to all the world, nothing new. And it is very stupid to say that I still have secrets from 18 years ago. So they say that I can still damage Israel's security, but in fact, they just want to exercise their power and the power to impose on people not to speak about their very dangerous atomic bombs.
Except that Israel, even in that 18-year period of time, has never publicly admitted to holding any kind of nuclear weapons. I wonder if that's why you are continually challenged for speaking out.
Yes, you are right. I hoped after all my publication with proofs and full details that something will change, but they continue to play like a blind man, don't see, don't hear, nothing happen, change.
Mr. Vanunu, if I go to any encyclopedia and look up a list of states that have nuclear weapons, most of them are going to include Israel in brackets there. I want you to explain to me why you think it's so important that Israel admit it has nuclear weapons.
It matters to me because we want them to admit they have atomic bomb, and then they cannot continue to demand from other world states in the Middle East, the Arab world, not to have atomic bomb. At the same time, they themselves will have atomic bomb. Other point also, they cannot come and teach us and teach the world about the Holocaust. How can they speak about the Holocaust if they themselves are possessing and producing Holocaust weapons, nuclear weapons? So is it enough with this game? Enough with this cheating. If you want a democracy, you should play according to democracy standard, according to democracy system. You cannot play this game of cheating and preaching Holocaust and such things.
Mordechai Vanunu, I suspect that there will be many people in Israel who will always see you as a traitor to the country for what you say.
Yes, but these Israel people, first of all, they should ask themselves, who they are, these Jewish people of Israel? Are they Democrats? Are they believe in democracy? Are they respecting human rights? Are they respecting the right of the people to know? What I did, I only went to the new media and published what Israel didn't want to tell the people of Israel and the world. I didn't spy for any foreign state. I was not working with any spy organization. So the Israel people are under psychological brainwash to regard me as a traitor. And don't forget, I am for them also double traitor because I become a Christian. And that's why I also emphasize all this story and continue to speak to let the world see the true reality of Israel. And don't forget, when they are silencing me, they are also silencing U.S. media. You will not find anyone in the U.S. media, CNN, ABC, NBC, who is speaking very clear about Israel's atomic bomb, in spite of all my proofs. So that is Israel succeeding to silence everyone by intimidating me and silencing me.
Mr. Vanunu, I want to thank you for speaking with us today.
Thank you.
Mordechai Vanunu is a nuclear technician at the Dimona Nuclear Center in Israel in the 1980s. He was imprisoned for divulging nuclear secrets, spent 18 years in jail. We're joined now live on the line from Jerusalem by Daniel Taub. He's speaking for the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Israel. Daniel, thanks for your time.
Good morning.
What is Israel's official position on the status of Vanunu now?
Well, Vanunu is a criminal. He's somebody who broke Israeli law. He signed an oath when he went to work for a sensitive security establishment that he would maintain confidentiality, and he didn't do that. And he served a very stiff sentence for that. He spent 18 years in prison for repeatedly trying to reveal the secrets that he'd promised not to reveal. But having done that, he really had served his time, and he was released. He was released with a number of conditions because he made clear his intention to continue to try to reveal secrets. And these conditions were tried to ensure that he wouldn't, not to speak to the press and so on. Since then, Mordechai Vanunu doesn't seem to have learned any lessons. He's continued to insist that he wants to break Israeli law. And that's the reason why he's currently under a criminal investigation. He was warned that this was what might happen. And at the moment, he is being questioned, and an investigation is taking place whether he is continuing to break Israeli law.
Now, he says he has no secrets that weren't given to the British newspaper 18 years ago. That's not good enough?
No, it's not good enough. It's not good enough because this is somebody who has continually placed his own opinion above that of the rest of the people. I have to say it's very strange to hear Mordechai Vanunu talking about democracy when Israel's policy in this area is one that's been established by the government that's been elected, or a series of governments that have been elected democratically. Now, Mordechai Vanunu can actually participate in those elections and can vote. But what he can't do is decide that his personal political opinion is more important than the opinion of the rest of the country, the one that they've decided on democratically.
And Daniel, where are we now with Israel's nuclear position? And for example, if I ask you, does Israel have nuclear weapons? What's the answer?
Well, of course, I'm not going to give you an answer on that. Our official position is quite clear. And anybody that looks at our region, looks at the fact that we're struggling to be a democratic country run by the rule of law in a region where that's very, very far from the norm, where we have countries not very far from us with tremendous military capabilities that have declared their intention to try and wipe us off the map, will realize that we have to try and take every measure at our disposal to try and protect the lives of our civilians. That's the reason why in Israel there's an almost, although we have wide range of differences of opinion on almost every issue, from the peace process to social issues, on this issue there's a near wall-to-wall consensus. That is a consensus of the entire people. It's reflected in our democratically elected government. And that's a consensus that Mordechai Vanunu, unfortunately, has decided for his own personal reasons that he's above the law, he's above the principles of democracy, and he's prepared to try and break that consensus and set himself above that in every opportunity that he can.
I mean, it's a question, Daniel, as you well know, that comes into clearer focus at a time when Iran's nuclear status is being called into question by European and other Western countries. Is that, when you look at what's going on there, is that a reason for you to say that this nuclear ambiguity is even more important, or something that may actually have to change?
But it's under continual review, obviously, like all aspects of our security policy. But where we stand at the moment, unfortunately, the security threats that we're facing today are as real as, and even more real than they've been in the past. We're a country that's faced a war for our existence every decade of our brief history as a state. Unfortunately, we've suffered many, many casualties. And we're not simply talking about, you know, the Mordechai Vanunu talks about freedom of speech, but we have to balance freedom of speech against very, very genuine security concerns. I think there's another point which is really should be stressed here. It's not really an issue of freedom of speech, because if he was an ordinary Israeli citizen, Mordechai Vanunu would be able to say whatever he liked in any interview that he liked. But Mordechai Vanunu is somebody who actually signed an oath when he took employment working in this establishment to maintain confidentiality. So it's not an issue of freedom of speech, and an issue of whether you have an obligation to your employer and to the country after you've taken on an obligation like that. And unfortunately, that's an obligation that Mordechai Vanunu has flouted in the past and continues to try to flout today.
Daniel, I thank you for being with us on the program.
Not at all.
Daniel Taub is a spokesman for Israel's Ministry of Foreign Affairs. When we come back after the break, a chance to talk with Duncan Campbell, reporter at The Guardian, who conducted a lengthy interview with Vanunu before his house arrest, and in fact focuses in some area on people who call themselves whistleblowers. We'll also talk with Dr. Gerald Steinberg, professor of political studies at Bar-Ilan University. We'd like to hear from you. We're at 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Dick Gordon, you're listening to The Connection this hour, a conversation about Mordechai Vanunu, not only the story of this person and his peculiar position in his extrajudicial state in Israel right now, but also what he represents for that nuclear ambiguity, the policy of Israel's nuclear program, where it's basically don't ask, don't tell. We'd like to have you join us at 1-800-423-8255. Gerald Steinberg is joining us on the line from Jerusalem. He's a professor of political studies at Bar-Ilan University, an arms control expert, and an occasional consultant to Israel's Ministry of Foreign Affairs and National Security Council. Gerald, thanks for taking the time to join us.
Good morning.
And Duncan Campbell's also with us. He's joining us from a studio in Wales. He's a reporter at The Guardian and conducted an interview with Mordechai Vanunu before his house arrest. And Duncan, I think that the interview that you did and the profile that it got in The Guardian has been pointed to as one of the reasons why perhaps Vanunu was catching the attention of the authorities in Israel once again.
I'm not so sure about that, because he was actually arrested before it appeared. He has been talking to a number of journalists and to a number of organisations prior to me.
Can you tell me, in your perspective, why he's still a newsworthy person?
Well, from our point of view, he was, in your introduction, you said he'd been captured by the Israelis. In fact, he was kidnapped. He was gave details of the nuclear plant at Dimona in London, and he was then lured abroad by a Mossad agent to Italy, where he was essentially overpowered, drugged, put on board a boat and smuggled out of Italy to Israel, where he stood trial in a secret trial. And we only knew what had happened to him because as he went into court, he flashed the palm of his hand, and written on it was the fact that he'd been kidnapped in Rome. So I think it's important from that point of view. This was somebody who was not, as he said himself, a spy. He was not selling secrets. He was not giving them to a foreign power. He was a whistleblower, very much in the style of Daniel Ellsberg, the American who in 1973 leaked the Pentagon Papers and who is a big supporter of Mordecai Vanunu. So I think from the point of view of the British media, he's of interest to us because he leaked to the British press. He was then lured abroad and never had the open trial in which I think he wanted to express the reasons he'd done it. He wanted to express his outrage at the idea of nuclear warfare and that was what had motivated him. And when I spoke to him, I asked him what his inspirations were. He mentioned Daniel Ellsberg. He mentioned also the American films, interestingly enough, The China Syndrome and Silkwood. But he said his main motivation was Hiroshima.
Gerald Steinberg, you're not a fan of the word whistleblower as a way of describing Vanunu.
I think that's putting it very precisely. A whistleblower is someone who exposes a violation of the law, some corrupt practice, something that's illegal. What Mr. Vanunu did, in fact, was commit a violation of the law. He broke the Israeli law. He also violated core Israeli security positions by himself, as Daniel Tao pointed out just a few minutes ago. He took it upon himself to overthrow the political and democratic opinion expressed by Israeli voters. We do have a democratic society here, just like in Britain. Mm-hmm. And what we don't really need is have somebody in a newspaper like The Guardian, which is a very strong anti-Israel position, or the BBC or any place else, telling the Israeli public that this somewhat simplistic and really psychologically troubled individual has some sort of truth that can be imposed on the Israeli public above and beyond what the Israeli public itself expresses in very intense political debates. And we do go to the polls, and we have a government that's elected to enact those policies.
Gerald, though, take me one step further into this definition that you use of the whistleblower as someone who exposes corrupt practices. If we use the example of Daniel Ellsberg and the Pentagon Papers, I mean, that was an exposure of something that the government was desperately trying to keep secret. I'm not sure if your definition applies there, but people look back at the Pentagon Papers as something, well, I'm not going to say everybody looks back at it as a good thing that information came out, but there are a lot of people who think Ellsberg did the right thing then.
I don't want to get into a comparison because the situation is entirely different. I can't compare Israel to the United States. I can't compare a country that's the size of New Jersey with a population of 6 million that's been at war since before it was created for its very survival. Mm-hmm. When we have countries like Iran down the road that have missiles that say, wipe Israel off the map, and they parade them through the streets of Tehran, I can't compare that with Washington and the United States of the 1960s or at any other time. It's just, there's no comparison. The Ellsberg case had to do with releasing a study thousands of pages long, and whether or not one can justify the leaking of that study is an entirely different question from whether someone who worked as a low-level technician in a nuclear plant violated his oath when he became an employee there and decides to impose his particular views and his eccentric positions, including his conversion to Christianity, all of that, much of which came out in the Duncan Campbell article, his Hollywood-type strategy imposed that on the Israeli public, who has a very real sense of the dangers to the society. I think the comparison is ludicrous.
Duncan, let's hear from you.
Yes, a couple of points. First of all, if I could clear up the myth that The Guardian is anti-Israel, that the BBC is anti-Israel. The Guardian is critical of aspects of Israeli government policy as it's critical of aspects of British and American government policy and so on. So if I could clear that up, it's a popular myth and I'd like to prick it. The second point about the Mordecai Vanunu being psychologically troubled and so on, this is a man who has spent 18 years in prison, 11 years in solitary confinement. He was not allowed to talk to the priest that was allowed to visit him. They could only communicate by exchanging notes. Obviously, he is coming out after a very, very difficult time inside, and one would have thought that in any decent society, somebody who has paid his penalty, he's served his 18 years inside, all he wants to do is leave. He has adoptive American parents. He's very complimentary about American democracy. He would like to live there or in Britain, maybe. It would seem that the simplest thing to have done would be to say, right, you've done your time. It's generally accepted. He has no more secrets. Of course he has no more secrets. He was a junior technician. He's been inside for 18 years. Privately, members of the Israeli government have said to Jerusalem correspondents to whom I've spoken that they accept that he has nothing new to say because his information is so out of date. So I think the logical position would be this is somebody, he's broken the law, we've accepted that, he's served his sentence, mm-hmm. and if he had been released, there would have been a flurry of interviews, he might have appeared various different places. We wouldn't be talking about him and Israel's nuclear weaponry at this moment.
All right, lots of questions here and a very wide divergence of views. We want to make sure that our callers are a part of the conversation. Our number's 1-800-423-8255. We're going to go first to Norfolk, Virginia. Charles has been waiting on the line. Hi, Charles.
Hi, how are you? And thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just raised the question that when Nununu made this announcement 18 years ago, Israel was 36 years old, somewhere in that area, as a new fledgling country. Almost two decades have passed by. First, they cannot think that what he has to say is of any value today. It's already been said. Second, he's already served his time. And how long do we punish people for infractions if they're not continuing them? Third is, can a country as sophisticated academically and financially as Israel think that the world is stupid to think that with all the modern technology they have, they do not have a nuclear program? And fourth, is it not perhaps more of a deterrent to their neighbors to say, yes, we have them, and in old warfare, you're standing eye to eye, versus saying, well, no, we don't? I mean, it's deceitful.
Yeah, they're not saying, no, we don't. They're just not answering the question, Charles. But
when I said implied in not answering it is, no, we don't. And just said, yes, we have them, period.
Gerald Steinberg, why is it, in your view, based on the sort of preface that Charles laid out for us, that this all happened a long, long time ago, is it such a certainty that Vanunu is still a dangerous man?
I'm not sure. There's no way that an outsider can judge that. And there is a debate, as Duncan Campbell pointed out, within Israel. But the process does go on, and there is a legal, very strong legal tradition in Israel. He's had his day in court. He will continue to have his day in court. And we'll find out whether or not there's enough information on what he's doing to make him to continue to see him as a danger to society. There's another half of the coin here to this, and that is what I call the cult of Vanunu. I'm not going to get into a discussion about whether The Guardian is or is not anti-Israel. Everybody who reads it can reach their own conclusion about the agenda that's involved here. But there is a cult. We wouldn't be talking about Vanunu now. If his information is that old and that irrelevant, what we really should be talking about is what are the reasons for the Israeli policy of nuclear ambiguity. I'd like to spend a couple of seconds. I think that, to some way, also responds to Charles' question. Ambiguity is really a mid-level position. On the one hand, Israel could declare its nuclear capability, make its deterrent public, like India did, like Pakistan did, like the five major nuclear powers do. The problem there is that would certainly stimulate the Middle East arms race even more than it exists already. In 1969, under tremendous American pressure, after the U.S. government spent 8 or 9 years trying to force Israel to give up this nuclear option. And the Israeli government, prime minister after prime minister, said, this is so vital to our survival, we cannot do that even with all of the threats coming from the United States. Then the U.S. recognized that the least damaging option, the U.S. and Israel together, was this don't ask, don't tell policy, which has been in place since 1969. Israel has not tested, it has not declared openly it has a nuclear capability. Unlike India and Pakistan, the India-Pakistani case is an example of a nuclear arms race that seems to be spiraling out of control. Now, perhaps that may be necessary if Iran continues down the line of developing nuclear weapons. We may not have any choice. We may have an open nuclear arms race, open deterrence. like we have in South Asia.
But no choice, you mean, Gerald, but to say, okay, we've got a weapon.
That's right, and to test it. It's not just saying it, but to test it and to put it out. First strike, second strike, submarines, all those things that the U.S., the Soviet Union, and the Cold War, other nuclear powers have gone through. That seems to me, and I think to the vast majority of Israeli strategists and the Israeli public, to be less of a less positive policy than the current policy of saying, look, we're hedging our bets. We would prefer not to go nuclear. We don't want to test. We want to be in a position that in a few years, when Iran and the other countries in the region finally accept legitimacy of Israel, stop preparing to try to destroy it, then we don't have the nuclear shadow hanging over. We can then quietly close down Dimona. We can quietly sign the NPT when we have diplomatic relations, when the threat disappears. Now, I understand that there's a counter-argument to that, but the ambiguity policy should not be so easily dismissed at all. And in many ways, what Van Inu is doing is he's providing an excuse, and I'm not saying that's a reason to keep him under surveillance. That's a different issue, but it's parallel. He provides a focus and an excuse for those individuals, primarily outside of Israel. He has very little following in Israel. The people who demonstrate in his favor are the same people who also support policies which are pro-Palestinian, which condemn Israel for defending its citizens against terrorism, condemning issues like targeted killings, calling them assassinations. All of those, there's a very consistent line. It's followed by groups like Human Rights Watch and Amnesty.
Let's not go too far into that crowd. I'm interested in staying with this if I can. And Duncan, as I was going through the notes last night, I was wondering to myself if 18 years ago, Mordechai Vanunu didn't do Israel something of a favor by opening the don't ask, don't tell, by saying that you know, the weapons were there, but though nobody ever knows.
Well, there is this point that in some ways he has, because it's alerted, if there were indeed people thinking along those lines, that there's not much point in having nuclear weapons unless people are aware of them, because the mutually assured destruction theory, which used to operate during the Cold War, was based on the fact that both major sides in it, knew what the other one could do terrible damage to them. So in a way, he's doing them a favor. The other point that I think is important is we are currently still in the middle of a war to do with the fact that somebody would not acknowledge whether or not they had nuclear weapons. And had Vanunu been an Iraqi or an Iranian or a North Korean and said, these exist, this is where they are, he would now be having a red carpet rolled out for him in the White House. So what he was doing was putting on the agenda the issue of nuclear weaponry. And as I say, I think that that's a valuable contribution. One of his main supporters is Sir Joseph Rotblat, who, as you know, is the Nobel Peace Prize winner in 1995, who worked on the atomic bomb at Los Alamos. And I think that that's particularly of relevance, that he feels there should be a debate. And essentially, we are having this debate now. It is important that we have a debate and that things are done openly, and that all he's doing is trying to open the box and let's talk about it. He's not encouraging people to be violent. In fact, one of the key parts of the interview with me was him saying, urging Gandhi-like non-violence on the Palestinians. And I think that that's a particularly important role that he's playing. He is saying, go for civil disobedience. Do not go for terror. Do not go for violence. And I think, you know, I hope Gerald Steinberg would agree that that's actually quite an important message that he's coming out with.
I want to go back to our callers at 1-800-423-8255 to Durham, North Carolina. Mohammed's on the line. Hi, Mohammed.
Hey. Whether Israel admits it has a nuclear weapon or not, it's irrelevant. It's anyways damaging for the international community. If they admit, then Iran will have, you know, the desire and, you know, the chance to have a nuclear weapon. And if they deny, will they still, you know, suspicious of what Israel has, and that will drive them to have a nuclear weapon. The question is, this Mr. Ghannouni, which after he signed a confidential agreement with the government of Israel. I'm Israeli citizen. And what I'm talking about is, this guy broke the law.
Yeah.
But the question is, can he still punish the rest of his life for a mistake that he did? I think he did a mistake, and he is punished for it. He got 18 years in jail. It's time for a democracy. It's time for an Israel, which claim it's a democracy country, to leave this guy alone, live his life. No matter what is going to happen, it's not going to, no matter what he's going to say, it's not going to change the view of the world of Israel having nuclear weapon or not.
Gerald, I wonder if keeping Vanunu in this kind of state of restrictions doesn't draw attention of reporters and keep him in a higher profile than if he were to, you know, sort of be put, set aside, as Mohammed is suggesting.
I think that's a good question, and as we talked about earlier, there is a debate in Israel about that. I think that's one of the important points. Duncan Campbell compared Israel, said, well, if Vanunu had been an Iraqi or North Korean or Iranian exposing the nuclear program, we'd be cheering. Of course, there's an important difference. Israel happens to be a democracy, and that's a huge difference, and I'm sort of surprised that someone who's based in Britain doesn't point that out. Also, Israel's not a member of the NPT. Israel didn't sign and violate its commitments, as in the case of Saddam Hussein. Whether or not the continued focus on Vanunu it was something that really did require this continued limitation on his freedom. There was a big debate, should he be kept after the 18 years. It would have been possible under some sort of administrative order to have kept him in much more limited space, allowing him to go and live in a church in Jerusalem where he is able to talk to you and other reporters. He is already a certain degree of openness. Whether he should have been totally freed, allowed to leave the country, and the story would have disappeared is a very hot item for debate. It's very hard for me to judge that. Until if it had been tried and failed, then the people who had recommended that would also be sitting under a searchlight right now trying to explain why it is that they made this a policy decision. It's a very tough decision. I don't envy the people in the Israeli government who have to make that decision. But Vanunu is constantly going through the court system, and he's using the advantages of living in a democratic and open society in order to push the envelope. And it may be decided that, in fact, he doesn't have any more secrets, and the risk may be taken to let him speak freely.
All right. More when we come back after a short break. Is Mordecai Vanunu a hero for the peace movement for speaking out, as he did 18 years ago, about the presence of nuclear weapons in Israel? Or is he a traitor to the Israeli state and, in fact, a dangerous contributor to an arms race in the Middle East? What are your thoughts about that? And what about that policy of nuclear ambiguity? Is it working? Is it working to maintain peace in the Middle East? Or is it part of what is keeping other countries looking at developing weapons? 1-800-423-8255 is the number to join us. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. My guest this hour, Gerald Steinberg, professor of political studies at Bar-Ilan University, and Duncan Campbell, a reporter at The Guardian. We're talking about the case of Mordecai Vanunu and what he represents in terms of Israel's don't ask, don't tell policy on nuclear weapons. We wound up our last segment there with Gerald Steinberg. And Duncan, I wanted to sort of move it ahead to where we are right now. I mean, I think that at one level, it is easy to make the case that Israel is a special case, given its geography, given its vulnerability. But, I mean, we have seen in recent years India developing a nuclear weapon because it's afraid of China to the north and Pakistan to the west, and Pakistan because it's afraid of India. And today in the news, questions about Brazil's nuclear capability and not much of that being answered. Does that mean that the nuclear ambiguity in Israel may be standing as an example for other countries?
Well, I think India and Pakistan embarked on a lot of extremely dangerous brinkmanship, and I think it reminded the rest of the world just how dangerous it is if you have powers that have historically been antagonistic towards each other in a confined area, both with the nuclear capabilities and the inevitable horrific scenario that would arise from a conflict. And I think, again, you know, looking at what Vanunu was trying to accomplish was to have that debate. And obviously, one would hope that people don't have to develop nuclear capabilities, that there is enough diplomacy, and we hope from the new talks between Tony Blair and President Bush this week is an indication that some of the conflicts can be run down. But I don't think that whether or not Israel has entitlement to nuclear ambiguity has any great relevance to what now happens to Mordecai Vanunu. I mean, I think he put it into the public arena. He has no more to say in terms of what they actually have, because his stuff is out of date. And I think it's now up to the politicians to discuss what he has entered into the public arena.
1-800-423-8255 to Columbia, South Carolina next. Linda's with us. Hi, Linda. What are you thinking?
Hi, good morning, and thank you for taking my call. Recently, Americans were polled, and they said that one of the most important problems they saw that going forward was going to be nuclear weapons. And this is becoming a very global world. And I think that, you know, Israel is a very small country, and I think we need to know where all nuclear weapons are. We need to know every country. And I also wonder if by talking more about it and bringing it more out to light, if there's going to be more information coming as far as the United States and how much we have paid for these nuclear weapons in Israel that we don't get to see.
Well, let's set aside the cost for the time being, Linda. When we went to the International Atomic Energy Agency, which is supposed to be the one international organization that keeps track of who has nuclear weapons. They have no formal position on whether or not Israel does or does not have a nuclear weapon, but the closest they will come to it is a speech that was made by the Director General, Mohammed El-Baradei, at Stanford University, when he made a list of the NPT nuclear weapon states, the five that are recognized, and then he also had a sublist of India, Pakistan, and Israel. So I guess my question, Linda, or maybe I should just turn it right to Gerald, is it's kind of acknowledged that the nuclear weapons exist. The only thing that is not is the on-paper admission of what it is. Does Linda have a point to make here that people everywhere in the world have a right to know where the nukes are?
It's always important to balance costs and benefits. Rights of people in the world to know where nuclear weapons are in the United States or in Russia and other places, it's a hard case to make. Each country and each people have to decide what's in the best interest for their survival. In the Israeli case, the issue of national survival is very, very pointed. It's quite different than the other countries. And so we have to measure this very carefully. If Israel, we talked earlier about the importance of ambiguity as a midpoint between having the India-Pakistan scenario or not having anything at all. And I think that point needs to be reemphasized. Ambiguity works. It works because it has prevented a nuclear holocaust. It's also prevented escalation. In 1991, we know that Saddam Hussein had chemical warheads. He probably had biological warheads. He did shoot 39 or 40 Scud missiles, but he didn't use any of those chemical or biological warheads against Israel. Now, the vast
But that's because
Israeli,
he knew, isn't it, Gerald? That's because he knew that the threat of a nuclear retaliation existed.
Let's see, Vanunu's main, I'd say, crusade here is not that Israel shouldn't have ambiguity, but that Israel shouldn't have nuclear weapons at all. In fact, his basic view is Israel shouldn't exist. But beyond that, Israel shouldn't have nuclear weapons. But ambiguity, or that the ambiguous policy is immoral and doesn't work. But in fact, it does work, and it is moral because it may have saved thousands or tens of thousands of lives.
It's interesting, though.
If it persuaded Saddam Hussein, just let me finish. I want to just add another point to that. If it persuaded Saddam Hussein not to use chemical and biological weapons, that's a success. We don't need more than that. But we also don't want to have less than that. If it brought Sadat to the peace table in 1977 because he understood Israel could not be destroyed without destroying Egypt, that's an important step. It may also eventually work for other countries in the region. So all those measures are important, and we have to look at the broad picture.
No, I get all that. It's just that I come back here to Duncan and the way that Vanunu expresses his own position. It's fairly simple for someone to say, I'm just against nuclear weapons. I'm against my country having nuclear weapons. I'm against every country having nuclear weapons. And it seems that in Israel, that's sort of too simple, Duncan.
Well, I think it's a legitimate point of view for somebody to have to say I'm against all nuclear weapons throughout the world. And I think that would be Mordecai Vanunu's position. It would be the position of the Campaign for Nuclear Disarmament that supports him. And I think that's a perfectly legitimate position. Anyone who has seen the after effects of Hiroshima, and I noticed that some of the people welcoming Vanunu outside the prison in Ashkelon when he was released were actually Japanese people from Hiroshima. I think anyone who's seen the terrible effects of it has to be terribly, terribly wary about, oh, you know, it is important for people to have it, and it's a debate that has not fully been conducted yet. And so from that point of view, for it to be suggested that he's being very naive, I don't think is fair. I think he has that very strong view against all nuclear weapons, and he's stuck by it very solidly. The main threat to security for life within Israel at the moment is very much, I think, Gerald Steinberg would agree at the moment, an internal issue. It's an issue between Israelis and Palestinians, and it's not the topic of this hour's conversation, but that would seem to me to be the gravest concern to citizens in Israel at the moment is the internal situation, which obviously can never be solved by nuclear weapons. And that, I think that's the key thing, isn't it?
Let's move along if we can. I want to take a call from Louisville, Kentucky. Charles is on the line from there. Hi, Charles.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, what do you think?
Well, I think there are a couple things. As always, it's a kind of a situation gray. But I think that Vanunu, having taken a confidentiality oath and sworn to, I guess, at some level to protect state secrets, is very fortunate that he hasn't paid with his life for what would be considered treasonous acts. I think that's one thing.
Charles, just before we leave that one, I mean, Ellsberg was a Defense Department analysis and would have been under some kind of secrecy restrictions on his own, which he chose to break. Should Ellsberg have also been treated more as a traitor and locked up?
Well, I think that there was a different situation with the Ellsberg situation, involved the United States being involved in a war of aggression overseas, an illegal war of aggression at that point that had not received congressional approval. It was basically a secret war being conducted by the United States on many levels. And he revealed a lot of details. That's very different from what's going on here, where
it's not a parallel. I'm just trying to sort of boil it down to the question of where you began by saying somebody broke an oath of secrecy, and does that mean automatically that whatever they say is irrelevant? They need to pay some ultimate price for that.
Well, I think where state secrets are involved that have to do with the protection, the very existence of the protection of the state. And I think that's where in Israel it's a unique situation, that Israel is this tiny little country. You can't even see it on the map, and it's surrounded by huge countries mm-hmm. that vastly outnumber it in population, that have resorted to ongoing war of terrorism as well as outright military attacks on Israel, and in order to basically to annihilate Israel, because these are countries that have refused to this point to recognize Israel's right to exist. And Israel has resorted to, if they do have nuclear weapons, I believe they're there absolutely as a deterrent and as a means of defending itself, not as a means to launch a war of aggression.
Charles, let me, if I can, just stop you there, because there's an interesting point in what you're saying that I'd like to hear Gerald on, and that is not really, Gerald, how would I put it? That the way Israel is treating Vanunu now has, in fact, less to do with Vanunu and more to do with sending a signal to other people who might be currently working in secret locations or in positions like Vanunu's old position, saying, you know what, this man is the warning that we will never tolerate anybody talking about something that we consider a state secret.
I think there may be an element of that. I have a lot of trouble speculating on motivations in any case, but on this specific case in particular, what are the motivations of the people in the Israeli government who have decided on the framework within which Vanunu has to act at this time? And that may be, in fact, part of it, as it might have been part of the decision to put him in jail for 18 years, the court case against him to bring him back, all of that process. I think the point that was made by, I think it was Charles, that Vanunu in a country like Iraq or North Korea, we heard those analogies earlier from Duncan Campbell, would not be now complaining that he doesn't get the full freedoms that he would like to have as a someone who's been convicted and then released. So I think those are all issues that have to be looked at. There is a deterrence element vis-a-vis other people who might want to follow this line. I think that one, it's hard to deny that as a possibility, but how much the role that plays is, I think, certainly open to question. I want to point out one other thing, and that is that there is a very intense debate in Israel about this issue. It's just that the most Israelis do not accept the view that the Israeli case should be like most of the other countries in the world, that Israel is not subject to a threat of annihilation. This is all public activity. There are public opinion polls taken by Tel Aviv University every year on questioning whether most of the public accepts the current Israeli position of ambiguity, opposes it, suggests that Israel should go for an open nuclear deterrent. And somewhere between 70% and 80% of the Israeli public consistently say they support the current policy.
And Duncan, when you
turn an Israeli newspaper and you see evidence of intense debate.
And Duncan, when you were there and did the interview with him, you also had a chance to speak with reporters who work in Israel, domestic and foreign reporters. I don't see a lot of coverage, as Gerald points out, in the Israeli papers. I don't, you know, there's not been much written since his second arrest almost a week ago.
Yes. I mean, his arrest took place on the morning that Yasser Arafat died. So for very obvious reasons, there wasn't very much coverage of it. Now, you can speculate as to whether the timing was deliberate or not. I don't know. But that was one of the main reasons that there hasn't been much coverage. The other is that he is allowed to talk to the Israeli media, but he has, and they have asked him for interviews, and he said he's happy to talk to them, but only when he can talk to all media. So that's another reason why perhaps there hasn't been very much coverage. And also, their interviews with him are subject to censorship. And his concern, as he expressed it to me, was that the full import of what he wanted to say would not necessarily appear in the interviews in the press. And, you know, I agree with Gerald Steinberg, you know, that Israel is a very, very free society. It's a good place in many ways for journalists to work, and obviously completely different conditions from many of the surrounding countries. But having said that, we do come back to our basic starting point, which is he did break the law. He has been very severely punished. I don't think anyone considering doing the same as him would think lightly about doing it. 11 years in solitary confinement is not a joke, and therefore I think time has been served, and he's entitled to say his piece and to be allowed to live in peace abroad.
Well, interesting story, and I thank you both for helping me with your perspectives. Duncan, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Duncan Campbell's a reporter at The Guardian, and Dr. Gerald Steinberg, thank you for your time as well.
And thank you.
Gerald is a professor of political studies at Bar-Ilan University. And earlier in the program, we talked with Daniel Taub of the Israel Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Mordechai Vanunu, who exposed Israel's nuclear program and spent some 18 years in prison, currently is under house arrest in East Jerusalem. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.